Poya.
This is Robbie.
Welcome to Uncharted and Eclectic.
And thanks for joining us again.
Eric, good morning. Welcome to the show. So great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Poya, for asking me to be on the show.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Eric, we'd like to kick it off for the listeners to just contextualize who you are. Do you mind maybe kicking us off with a nice personal as well as a business bio?
Sure. So currently, I'm the head of partnerships at ChargeBee. ChargeBee is a subscription management company focused on providing recurring billing and subscription management software for a number of companies who are looking at this as their business model. In terms of my background, the one common theme that I tell people is that I've basically spent my career in software, but all of the software has been not necessarily in a particular industry. So initially I started my career on internet software, then I moved into kind of enterprise, then have done telecom as well as automotive and financial services. And ChargeBee, I'm basically back at enterprise software again.
It's almost like the marine analogies, like how you get to the top of the mountain, right? Is for everybody, it's a little different. And your, I would say at least business bio is like the perfect illustration of that. Looking back, now that you're in partnerships, Eric, what do you think like the various roles you've had? And what people don't realize is you've been at Sun Microsystems, you've been at Mercedes. Like looking back, how have those different roles helped you in your current role?
That's a great question. I think when I talk to other partnership people, and in fact, when I'm trying to build out my team, you know, there really isn't kind of this prototypical person or profile that says, hey, you know, this would be a perfect partner person, right? Or we know we can kind of, they can do the job. I will say one theme that I do like, because there is this sense of urgency with partnerships, even though we're on a slower time frame, is that if the individual has done a stint in sales, and the reason for that is, you know, you typically learn that you're under pressure, you have a quota, but also that you need to learn how to close. And so that's important, because as we're building partnerships with, you know, the likes of a Stripe or a PayPal or even Salesforce, and even to some degree Saster, you know, we need to learn how to sort of close this phase of the relationship and get to the next one, or understand what it's going to take to, you know, close something that's going to be beneficial to both companies. After that, I think what's been helpful for me is having been a product manager before, so understanding how a product is built, thinking in terms of that, having done some marketing roles, because you do have to sell a little bit of sizzle, as they say, to the steak. And so all of those different experiences, I think, help make you a very well-rounded person that can handle a lot of uncertainty and a lot of unknowns when it comes to partnerships.
We have some listeners, believe it or not, from Europe and other parts of the world, where sometimes they're like, you Americans use these analogies and we have no idea what they mean. So elaborate a little more about what you mean by sizzle and the steak. I just want to make sure people clarify what you
mean. Yeah. So, that term is used in advertising, and what the analogy refers to is I can sell you a steak. You know, I can show you, I guess, pictures of meat, or I can say how great it is, but it's really, how do I sell the demand, or how do I sell that you need it now? And so that comes with a story. And so usually when you look at advertising, the story is around, you know, someone being either successful, or, you know, you want to emulate the activity or that person who is essentially selling you a piece of steak. And
Love
that's
it.
Really where the sizzle comes in, is to kind of really, you know, gets you out of your chair if you're, or you know, on off of the sofa from watching TV and go out there and go get a steak, right?
Yeah, 100%. So this is actually a good follow-up question. How do you incentivize your partners, right, to start, like, to get that urgency to kind of work with you? Like, how do you, I would love to just from your perspective understand how you do that. And then two, how do you make it a win-win, right, for them to, like, what are some, whether it's tactical frameworks, things that, like, you advise people that are maybe are earlier in this journey, like me, of basically making it a win-win for people to, like take you seriously, but act now, kind of similar to what you're elaborating on.
Sure. So when we're looking at, let's say, new partners, right, we have a rough framework that we've put together, and it has to kind of align with a few different things. One is it going to be beneficial for our customers, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be something that is squarely related to what our product does. So in this case, something that's squarely related to what we do would be working with a PSP, something like a Braintree or an Adyen, some of our current partners, where, you know, you send an invoice to a customer and they need to pay for the services that we provide to our merchants. And that's a kind of a direct correlation. Something that's, you know, more complementary would be, for example, assessing sales tax, right? So you buy a product online and you're being charged sales tax. And so partners that can provide those automated solutions, you know, benefit us in a complementary way. So we kind of look at the value. The second one is looking at how hard is it going to be to actually do the deal. And when I say the deal, that's kind of all encompassing of, you know, signing some paperwork, implementing a solution, the go-to-market strategy. You know, what does that look like? Because if it's something that is directly correlated, well, then that hopefully means that sales will go up, more business activity, et cetera. If it's something complementary, you know, that could be another way to look at, well, if this two products together and we're servicing the customer, that's a way to create stickiness and maybe a way to reduce churn. And then the third sort of angle would be, are we doing things maybe that are delighting the customer, or maybe we're advancing the product? So advancing the product could be, now we're going to do some personalization or customization, maybe using machine learning, something like that, where you know, people understand receiving an invoice or receiving a bill in the mail or in their email, but what's the next level after that? And so those kind of three dimensions help us think about how to filter and how to create some kind of win-win relationship. And then at a much more tactical level, when you start engaging with that partner, you know, why not just ask the simple question to the person on the other side of the table, you know, what's going to make you successful? What are you gold on, right? Is it revenue? Is it customers? Is it, you know, global reach, right? You know, understanding how they're going to be rewarded for doing a deal with the other side of the table is really important, because then you know how you can operate within a certain set of parameters to try to create something where there is a win-win.
I really good framework, and even just the tactical advice you have. Thanks for sharing. Are partners, from your experience, usually, are they measured by revenue? Is it opportunities? Like, what's the KPI usually that's tied, from your experience?
A lot of them are, and that actually is a really, you know, simple way to kind of attack how we can come up with, you know, joint marketing plans, promotions, but also really understanding what are the drivers for their business. So if they decide to segment, you know, based on the size of customer or certain verticals, that also gives us that focus. If they're not specifically tied to revenue, they might be tied to sales pipeline. So for example, if our team is gold on driving sales pipeline that we hand over to sales, we're not going to be beholden to seeing how many deals close. That's a function of the sales team. But maybe our goal is, could we help them generate, 2x pipeline so that they can actually have a higher assurance that they're going to hit their numbers, so more deals in the pipe that the sales team have opportunities to close.
Yeah, well communicated. And from your experience, whether it's at ChargeBee or somewhere else, how do you, because where my head goes, right, like being in sales, like how do you make sure you make it a win-win for the internal stakeholders, making sure like your sales team is not getting in the way of like partnerships? Like what are, I guess, some of the unintended consequences? Like, has that happened? Like where, like, how do you make sure they're not getting in each other's toes? Like, do you get what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah. So that's a great question, Poya. I do actually spend a fair amount of my day or a fair amount of my time working with the different teams. And this is sort of a general framework, which is, your internal constituents that you need to be on the same page with are everybody from the sales team, because we're going to hopefully be giving them leads, the marketing team, because we need to understand how does, us plus partner or partners build out a better story. We have to spend a lot of time working with the technical side of things, being a software company. So we spend a lot of time with our pre-sales team and our post-sales implementation. They need to understand, what this product does and how does it integrate and how does it make things better. And then we also spend a lot of time with our customer success team. They need to understand why a customer is picking a certain set of tools to help drive their business. And so I spend a lot of time talking with each of these teams about, what do they need from the partner? What's going to be helpful? Is it training? Is it support? Is it collateral? Anything that can make us show that we understand the customer's problem. And it's not just focused on us, but, focused on kind of the entire problem that we're trying to solve for the customer.
Yeah. And, what are some things from your experience? Like, when does this not, like, what are some patterns that that make partnerships successful, or commonalities of like things that you think have worked really well? And where have you seen it not work, I guess? And maybe that's such a simple question, but I'm just trying to maybe learn from your experience.
Yeah, so I think to a lot of people, partnerships is kind of this animal that is in a nebulous form, and it's hard to pin down what we do or what our day-to-day looks like. And I kind of have this framework in my head, which I tried to tell some of our teams, which is this, what does success look like from partnerships? Typically the easiest one is, we can see how much revenue our team generated, or can be attributed to the work that we do. But I feel that that's actually a very simple and small part of the entire sort of work that we do. If you think about all the things that we do, relationships are a very important part. Still very much a people-driven business. We are selling, or we're trying to be convincing to other companies, and those companies have, other partnership people who we're interfacing with. And then beyond that, you have to understand what kind of influence you can create. And influence can come in many different forms, right? Influence can come from G2 crowd, like being recognized by a third party that you are a leader in the space. At a more tactical level for sales, maybe you create spiffs, you create incentives to help them. Or, joint case studies or testimonials that show that partnering with this company has allowed, a joint customer to realize some success, right? And then all of that, right, the relationships and influence that drive revenue are all built around trust. You have to have a lot of trust with your partner that we are doing the right thing that will ultimately benefit customers and prospects. And then if you take that entire framework that I just described, how do you then create a repeatable, scalable process around that? And that's what I think success looks like for partnerships.
Yeah, I love it. It's just thinking, because I've known you and I've worked with you, it's almost like you're the backup quarterback, where people don't realize like how much work you go into it. Like, you're almost a product manager where you have to work with different teams. Then you got to like incentivize and be ready to go with the sales team and marketing. But you're also like at all times like working externally. So it's just interesting. And maybe that's a bad analogy. Where do you think there's opportunities to like improve partnerships? Like, where do you think there's missed opportunities for some companies?
Process would definitely be a big one. I'm really surprised that some companies don't have very good process. The other one is related to process, putting in systems. So actually investing in infrastructure. If you think about going back to the relationships and the influence, right? You don't want your inbox to be the bottleneck. Most companies now, they have aspirations of being very distributed or very global. And, you know, I can only work so many hours of the day. And if I'm seeing 10 emails in my inbox while I'm asleep and I wake up and I see that there's all this work I need to do, I'm actually not building very good infrastructure. So looking at tools that, you know, can be more on-demand or self-service, where people can get the information or understand how to reach certain people or understand how, you know, we work with another company to provide a solution to a joint customer. All of these things can be done in a much more distributed and on-demand or self-service sort of method so that people can get the answers that they need.
Yeah, just streamlining it, right? It from day one to make sure it's scalable. Look, this is a tough question, and I know there's a lot of context that needs to go into it. But if I was a founder and I came to you and said, Eric, when do you think I should maybe implement partnerships, or like maybe evaluate partnerships as like a one way of going to market? Like, what advice would you give them?
So I think. I would frame it this way. When times are good, and I'll use that as a relative term, you have the luxury of building things yourself. You can build lots of tools, you can build lots of features, and not have to worry about whether or not your customer is going to use it. Like, you have the luxury of time to kind of convince them. I think when times are bad, that's when you as a business start contracting or being even more laser focused about what problem you're solving and what's your unique value proposition. And so in that case, in order to solve an entire workflow for a customer or a complete problem, looking at partners who can complement you and maybe even give you lift, meaning a founder will want to partner with a slightly bigger company than they are to sort of appear bigger than they are, and a way to look like they're punching above their weight. You know, we kind of would do the same. We're obviously not a startup anymore, but we're nowhere near as large as some of the largest software companies. So we're going to do the same. And so when you think about this partnering strategy, it allows you then to not only expand the customers who you could potentially reach out to, your solution looks more complete, and customers will feel like you are able to build trust because now you're working with known quantities or known companies in the market.
Well said, well communicated. And you actually even answered another question, which was like, when do you implement it? So thanks for indirectly getting two questions with one. I know myself and a lot of listeners love when you give it a specific example, are you okay if whether it's at ChargeBee or somewhere else, like giving us a specific example of how you guys went through this framework and how you partnered with another company and how it was a win, like just really quickly, like giving the from the beginning to the end story of like how you actually put this into place with one of your partners?
Sure. I'll actually give an example from my days at Mercedes. So when I was at Mercedes, since I was running operations, lots of things came on my desk in terms of responsibilities. One of them, which may sound very trivial, but I'm sure lots of people have gone through this, which is how do you control expenses at a company, but without making it seem too onerous on the employee, right? You want them to be creative, you want them to do their job, and you don't want to interfere, but you do need to put in some rules and guidelines in place. And one of the ones, again, this may sound trivial, but it is quite a large problem at a big company, was people's cell phone bills. Right? Being a global company, we had lots of people who were calling Europe all the time directly from their phone. They were traveling a lot all over the globe to kind of source partners and materials and products in order to put them ultimately into a car. And nobody was really managing the oversight of how much we were spending on it. And it came across my desk as, you know, one project that we had to solve. And so I started looking for vendors. I also started conversations with you know, the various cell phone providers, Verizon, Sprint, et cetera. And I couldn't find a really good solution. And then what I did was I said, okay, there's got to be something out there. I just, you know, Google's not helping me, or I just can't know or understand the right terms. And so one orthogonal thing that I did was I actually just went to two different conferences that were talking about enterprise technologies and enterprise software. And that's where I got to meet some vendors, but also talk to other people who were having this similar problem. So I tried to take myself out of the office and say, what are other people who are trying to solve this similar problem? What are they doing and who are they talking to? And it turns out that one of the two conferences I went to, I actually found a vendor who was directly addressing this problem. And their approach was not just simply, hey, we're gonna manage the bill for you. They were taking the approach of implementing a tool that essentially dynamically took everybody's account as part of the organization and found ways to optimize and utilize kind of 100 and some odd people's accounts as like one unified account. So what that did was, you know, let's say Poya next month, well, maybe not next month, but sometime in the future, you have a lot of travel. And so you have a lot of roaming fees and you're, you know, flying all over the place. Could we leverage your plan and maybe 10 other employees' plans who don't travel to kind of minimize the cost because we're shifting the usage patterns and we're shifting all the fees to more of a group account. And because of that, we were able to save, you know, on average more than 20% per month.
It's brilliant. It's almost like Trinet, what they do with HR for small businesses, mm-hmm. Group everybody into one. It's the same business model and I never even thought about it. So really good example and I appreciate you for sharing it. Look, I've learned a lot in just the last 20, 25 minutes about a topic that I probably should have known about, but I didn't. So I can't thank you enough, Eric, for sharing your wisdom and your context. And I know we can probably go on and on about this topic, but the next part of our show is what we call the famous three, where I ask you a quick question and you have hopefully 30 to 60 seconds to answer it. So what do you wish you had known? This could be before you joined the professional world, before ChargeBee, like what is that one thing for you?
Sure. So having been in tech for my career, we get convinced that the way to market and sell things is that it's all about features, speeds, and feeds. But the reality is that all people, regardless of their title or their level in an organization, they just want to hear a good story. So you need to be convincing, obviously sprinkle in some facts, but also show, you know, the conclusion, which is hopefully a victory or a success or a triumph. And that's taken, I'm surprised at, you know, at myself sometimes, it's taken a long time to kind of realize that that's actually the more important thing, rather than just saying, oh, this is faster, or this will save you, you know, money, or it has all these great features.
Tell the why, or however you want to define it, but well communicated. Looking back, what is something that you believe to be true that others don't, or majority of people might not agree with you on? What is that one thing?
Spend time learning how to ask better questions. And the reason for that is if you do, people can see the effort you're putting in. And more often than not, they're willing to help. And because of that, it's a faster way to connect with people.
I love it. It's one of the reasons I actually started that podcast, is that's an area of improvement for me. So hopefully I'm learning and up leveling my game. But from your experience, what are some things, what are some things people can do to get better at that skill?
You know, sometimes it's just a matter of doing a little bit of homework before you go to the meeting, you know, just prepping and saying, okay, who am I meeting with? What does their company do? You know, what's maybe something in the news that they were in, you know, recently announced or something like that. And just kind of ask questions, right? You know, how does that press release, or how did the funding, or, you know, the deal that you did impact, you know, you or your business? You know, get them to kind of talk about that, right? And what the way they answer or how they answer can also understand who you're dealing with. It can understand, you know, what they're motivated by. And that's more than just what sort of the marketing folks will put on a website, right? So you're trying to dig down beyond kind of the surface level in order to get to hopefully some commonality.
Cool. Very well communicated. Last question. What's one person or experience that's guided you, that's had a very profound impact on you over the years?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that I have a strong wanderlust that was cultivated at an early age. So instead of my parents sort of spoiling me with endless toys or things like that, they gave me the gift of travel. And it was really, I think, you know, one of the best things that they've done for me, which was exposing myself to, you know, different types of food and languages and culture. And eventually it shaped some of my hobbies. So one of the ones is I really like to try new food and cook. And also just like listening to all kinds of different music. So I think that's been one thing that's definitely impacted me.
Yeah, I value experiences any day over the objects or some of the just tangible things that we're used to getting. What's one area that you traveled to like early on that like really surprised you, like it exceeded your expectations? What is that one place for you?
Exceeded my expectations. I think it wasn't early on. It was actually more recent. I got the chance to travel to Algeria, and I had not known that much about the country or, you know, that part of the world. And so I, you know, did my homework, tried to understand, you know, where I was going, things like that. And what I was pleasantly surprised is that they are really trying to modernize, and they're really trying to innovate locally to benefit the people there. And you can kind of see the struggle, but at the same time, kind of this hope that they're really trying to progress the economy much more than I was expecting.
Yeah, well, your answers have exceeded our expectations today. So I can't thank you enough, Eric. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And the chance listeners want to get in touch with you, what would be the best way if you're open to it?
LinkedIn and Twitter are the best to reach out to me.
Okay. So Eric Chan on LinkedIn and Twitter. We'll make sure to bug you. So thanks so much again for being a great partner, friend, and advocate over the years, Eric. And hopefully we'll see you sooner rather than later.
Great. Thanks very much, Poya.
Helps engineers and engineering managers become great leaders. And how do they do that? Well, Plato helps you find the perfect mentor thanks to its network of experienced engineering leaders who work at the world's best tech companies. For a monthly fee, you have unlimited access to mentors who can help when you have challenging situations as a manager. Visit them at PlatoHQ.com.